Hello.
Hi, is this Mr. Is this Mr. J, as you were called elsewhere before?
Yes, this is Mr. Will Goose. J Will Goose.
That's awesome. That's a great. That should be your ringtone for everywhere. How are you? I'm Anatole from Indie Band Guru.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Good. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. We're in the van, so hopefully reception will stay. But,
hopefully.
We'll see.
Are you in Chicago right now, or I saw you had a gig there?
Yeah, we're on the outskirts of Chicago. I'm trying to point out the Sears building to Wrigglesworth because I saw it a while back. now I've lost it.
And that definitely goes with the aesthetic of Race for Space, doesn't it? The Sears building.
Look, it's straight down there. You can see it. Nice to shadow. Sorry, he's not listening to me.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I gotta say, I discovered you through NPR, and I am a huge fan, so this will not be an objective interview.
Okay, well, right. Okay, no problem.
You'll have to look at, you'll have to wait for somebody else to give you the hard-hitting questions.
Okay.
So, first let's talk about your aesthetic, because, it definitely sets you apart from all the other bands. All the other bands in your niche. So is black and white the color of the future?
That's an interesting one. No.
Okay.
I'd say no. No, I don't know. We've kind of moved into color mostly with the new album. I think pretty much everything on there is color apart from Apollo 8.
Sure, sure.
I don't know. I think for me, even the stuff we have used as black and white, not to take your question too literally, of course, but even the stuff we have used as black and white, I don't know. I think it's the way that we're kind of writing contemporary music around it and attempting to kind of reshape it that is the interesting thing rather than, being some sort of throwback.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's whatever footage that, strikes your fancy, right?
Yeah. Well, it tends to be the stuff that we sample for the songs, but sometimes it's a slightly more kind of it's a bit more of a leap in terms of the subject, yeah.
Cool, cool. How do you fit in? How well or is retrofuturistic a good word to apply to your aesthetic?
Yeah, that's not a bad way of describing it, I suppose. One, in terms of like a musical classification, somebody called us collage rock the other day.
Oh, sure, sure.
Which I thought was quite nice. But yeah, that's probably about. It's really hard to describe what we do, so retrofuturistic kind of slightly fits the bill, I guess. So
cool, cool. I mean, hey, well, in New York, they'll definitely latch onto that, so hopefully. I've seen that you've said that Gagarin is a superhero theme for Gagarin. So on that note, who is your favorite superhero?
I grew up being a massive Spider-Man fan, so probably Spider-Man.
Oh, dude.
I like the nerdiness combined with, obviously, pretty mad skills.
Dude, not only are you one of my favorite bands, you also like my favorite superhero. So what are you gonna like go ahead and so when are you making Turn Off the Dark 2?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that. What was that? What are we?
When are you releasing your own Spider-Man musical?
I think you can take a warning from how well the Broadway musical did. I don't think we'll be getting near that one.
All right. On a related note, you guys seem to tell stories a lot through what you're doing. Is that and I'm jumping ahead a little bit. So is a storytelling aspect something that you consciously think of when you're writing?
It is more and more, yeah. It wasn't in the beginning. And I think the lack of it is something that I got a bit frustrated by, which is why I turned to writing about single topics for the War Room. Because I thought you could kind of build a bit more of a narrative into it that way.
And sure, sure.
It's obviously something we kind of developed a lot more with The Race for Space. I like the first album. I think it's kind of, it's good kind of scattergun fun and with some more serious moments on it. But I think, Race for Space just feels a bit more kind of coherent to me because you have the luxury of telling a more cohesive story, I guess.
Sure. I mean, and you know, to me, when I checked out the War Room, I was like, you know, is Kubrick an influence?
Yes. It's weird how you can hear that in music, but yes, definitely. Yeah, number one. I'd say it's number one without a doubt. Number one.
Sure. And on that note, how hard is it for you to put in your influences in your music, you know, without having the luxury of vocals?
Well, I always say that vocals are only one instrument, and you know, there's
yeah, maybe luxury is not the right word, but you know, without that tool.
I mean, you know, music is and has been for so long about so much more than just the kind of elite vocal. I think
sure.
The last sort of 40 or 50 years of pop music has kind of slightly distorted the playing field a bit, and you're now viewed as, you know, deeply odd and uncommercial if you don't have vocals, whereas, you know, a lot of the most popular music in history is wordless and manages to kind of translate influences and emotions perfectly just using music, which is, you know, possibly the most communicative art form anyway, I would say.
Sure.
Certainly one of the most emotive and immediately grabbing and universal. I don't really buy into the idea of, you know, vocals as some kind of authentic expression of influence, whereas, you know, just sort of the backing, if you will, is just backing. I think you know, it should all be equally important, really.
Sure. And so I guess let's jump to the writing process. What is the percentage of, you know, conceptualization versus the recording, you know, whenever you're writing?
It's difficult to say, really. I mean, I think with this, I started off before even doing much research. Started off with like four or five different ideas for songs based on events I knew about, and then the more I did research, the more I kind of found bits and pieces that I also wanted to write about and thought would slot into the album quite well. At the same time, you know, there's musical stuff happening all the time. There's like bits of music sort of being written and sound checks and just, you know, me recording sort of doodles
on
the phone and stuff, which my wife very gleefully played a couple of the other day.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, how was the rock
thing? It's just me kind of like humming along to something. She's like, oh, I'm terrible. I'm like,
that's
awesome.
You.
Thank you. it's kind of, it's hard. Sometimes it's, you know, a musical idea matching itself up to you know, a story and then going out and finding the way to tell that story, and other times it's finding the story and then having to sort of work on the music, I suppose, to match it.
Sure. And do you also do that with the footage? Like, do you go back? Do you retroactively? We're using that word retro a lot, but retroactively go back and, you know, find footage to fit a theme, or, you know, is it the other way around?
Most of the time, I mean, with all the Russian stuff on this album, it all came from video footage anyway. So that's,
sure,
you know, it's going to be simple to go and put the video together at the very end of the process. But some of the stuff, I was just working off the Mission Control audio, so I hadn't seen any video when I wrote that.
Oh, wow.
Similarly, with the Apollo 8 song, the other side, I hadn't seen any video for that. So when
right.
it comes to putting live videos together, we've had to kind of, you know, start casting about for stuff that will go well with it. We've got very lucky to go. We got a whole load of Mission Control footage,
which
works really well with it.
That's awesome. I remember you said, you know, when you were when you did the KXP performance, you had someone on the team who you couldn't bring over in charge of the live footage. Who was that?
Oh, we got Mr. B, who's a visual artist.
Mr. B, right? Okay.
He does set design and he does live visuals with us, and he's an incredibly talented individual.
Very cool.
It doesn't really make sense for the size of stages we're playing here, where we can basically just cast you on. It doesn't really make sense to, well, it certainly doesn't make financial sense. Hoping we'll be able to get him out for a US tour at some point. We're just trying to plug away at the moment and just keep growing it to a level where we can, you know, keep adding adding to it as we have done at home for the past 5 years.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, congrats on what you've been able to do back home. Let's hope you can do it here, too. here on Indie Band Guru, we... you know, we're geared more towards, you know, indie bands. So, and, you know, so we talk about the struggle too. So, like, what challenges have you run into being, you know, like doing, especially performing your music live? Like, you know, you get compared to Daft Punk, but have you ever been tempted to just, you know, just do it all electronically live?
Not really, no, because I get a bit frustrated by watching bands like that or acts like that where electronically, you know, it's all been done very cleverly.
Sure.
You're not actually kind of adding anything in terms of the way of entertainment or kind of musical engagement with the audience, which I think is a big part of playing live. So
sure.
I'd much prefer to kind of put the electronic own sort of underneath it all and then present it through sort of the shell of a you know, more conventional setup, I suppose, of, you know, guitar and drums. I mean, there's all kinds of electronics going on between me and Riggles as well, and obviously right. Bands on there as well, but I just think it's more musically arresting, I suppose, and you can add more sort of muscle to it as well. I think a lot of people are quite surprised by the sort of the intensity of the live show and how it's quite a sort of, without wanting to sound weird or pretentious, it's quite a sort of muscular beast, you know, there's quite a lot of beast in it. It's not kind of, you know, hopping, you know, sort of skipping around the edges of anything. You know, we do kind of definitely give it some welly. Hey, Lou?
Hi, yeah, I think I lost for a second. Sorry. I'm still here.
Okay.
Great. So you're still, you know, it's still you guys playing, and, you know, that's very, from what I understand, that's the core. It's you know, the live performance is part of the package.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Actually going back to the, you know, the pop music, how hard is it for you to make the radio edits, like, go, I gotta say, I just discovered the song today, and fantastic. Well done, sir.
Oh, thank you.
No problem.
What do you mean? How hard is it to get it on the radio, or
to you know, plan out the radio, to edit, to make the radio edit? Like, how do you translate what you do into a radio edit?
We kind of took between the album version, you know, to take your question literally, between the album version and the version that's gone to radio, there's probably about 20 or 25 seconds snipped out of it.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah. It's not kind of a drastic cut. It's more, it's more kind of snipping out the extra room, I suppose, the room to kind of breathe that you kind of have the luxury of leaving in on that album. But if you're trying to get something across instantly, then you could get it done in under 4 minutes, really. Otherwise, you're dead in water. So, there's always bits you could have got rid of. There's you know, 15 seconds of kind of ambient intro, so you can instantly make that about 5, and it does roughly the same job, you know.
Right, right.
Cutting 4 bars here or there. I'm not a bad sort of self-editor, so I don't get too precious about it. If the song still works, I'm perfectly happy to take it out. I think, generally speaking, the more and the better editing you can do, the better the song will be.
Sure, sure.
You know, if a song's 7 minutes long, it really has to justify being 7 minutes long. It can't just be because you just, you know, you fancied another chorus in there.
Right, right. And that's something that, you know, I'm really impressed with, impressed by, you know, like how tight you can make your songs. You know, there are bands who will gladly make this, you know, 9 minutes long, but, you know, they'll lose the song in the process.
it just doesn't really appeal to me. I think it's good to leave room for that live, and certainly to expand things and kind of be a bit more indulgent live, because you can kind of play off the musicality of it, and you can kind of show people what's happening, and you know, people want the live version to be different to the recorded version anyway, but I kind of see the recorded version, it should be like, there shouldn't be much fat on it.
Sure, sure.
Having said that, you know, I did feel with the new album, we'd earned the right to kind of stretch our legs a little bit. So, you know, Sputnik has crossed the 7 minute mark, but
right, right.
It's very much as a kind of setup to the album as a whole, and and also that kind of genre of music that we've written it in, you know, it's home to a lot of long sort of 12-inch mixes, so it's kind of that, from that kind of side of things, rather than, you know, just wanting to get all self-indulgent.
Sure. Speaking of, you know, the kind of music you're doing and, like, you know, where we are in the music spectrum, to, you know, where we are now, today's music sphere, how important do you think it is for youngish bands to think of the entire package? Sorry, let me refine that question a little bit more. How important is it for young bands to think of the complete package while having to compete for people's attention on Twitter or social media or, you know, on YouTube?
I don't know. The only thing I would say is just try and be doing something new. Be bringing something different to what you're doing, because if you're not bringing something new and if you're not doing something different, then you need to be extraordinarily good and extraordinarily lucky to break through, because, you know, this only bands, you know, four-piece, five-piece indie bands doing roughly the same sort of stuff, you know, and if you're doing that, you're basically, you're saying to the audience that we are, you know, we're incredibly talented at what we do, which is not necessarily always the case. Whereas if you've kind of got the, you know, if you're lucky enough that you kind of hit on something that not a lot of people are doing, you've got a great deal more leeway, because, you know, you don't have to be, you know, you're instantly not competing with sort of thousands and thousands of other bands, you know, you've kind of reduced it to just a few. There might be for a very good reason. It might be nobody else is doing it because it's a terrible idea and it won't work. But you never know that until you try, I guess.
Sure. Going back to your background a little bit, how did you arrive at, you know, at Jay Wilgoose and Wrigglesworth? How did you come up with the whole aesthetic, basically?
Just over time, really. I just started doing PSB at home because various other bands had kind of fallen by the wayside, which had mostly been like guitar stuff in. It's the kind of music, or it was at the start, it was something kind of music you just really make in your bedroom. So, I did. and then the more songs I wrote, the more I started to think about maybe playing it live and then thinking how you could do that and make it accessible. And then, you know, the name of it kind of emerges, and then the names of the people playing it also, and, you know, kind of outfits. It all kind of slowly starts coming out of the woodwork, really.
right.
I mean, it wasn't like a kind of sitting down and it all kind of came out in one, you know, creative splurge. It's kind of emerged over a long period.
Very cool. I was going to ask, like, how important is it for youngish bands to, you know, adopt pseudonyms, which your name is not, from what I've heard.
we won't comment either way. You know, it's nice to have a bit of mystery.
Right, exactly.
I wouldn't really seek to dictate to anyone how they go about their business. It's just we like to remain a little bit enigmatic.
Right.
That's how we do it.
Great. Speaking of enigmatic, you've made this tribute to Gagarin. When can we expect something for Elon Musk?
Maybe not for a while. I don't know. I've kind of got an idea of where we're going next, and it's probably moving away from sort of big and massively kind of technologically focused stuff, I guess.
Sure.
We'll see where we end up.
Sure. On a related note, like what kind of public figure do you look up to? Who do you look up to? who influences these tributes?
difficult. Contemporary. Sure. I mean, you know, sort of people I look up to generally in historical terms is people like George Orwell, I suppose.
And
people like that, people who have a bit of integrity, and bands like Radiohead, I suppose, who kind of managed to maintain sort of fiercely independent streak. I guess just people with integrity who aren't
very cool
to stick the neck out there.
Hey, that's a good hashtag. Hashtag integrity. just a couple of questions about the future in space, because you know I think like this album couldn't have come out at a better time, especially with Elon Musk taking in the headlines, and especially with Mad Men exploring 1969 again. So what's your take on that? How much is space travel and space and looking outwards? How much is that back in the public consciousness?
Well, I think it's great. It's really had a kind of resurgence of sort of press interest, I guess, and public interest in the last 6 months or so, starting with the sort of the comet landing, and all the kind of private initiative stuff that's in various stages of being remotely realistic or not. I think it's fantastic, and I think anything that kind of forces us to consider our place on, in the grander scheme of things and our future is can only be good for us, really. That's one of the things I liked about working on this, is kind of the perspective it gives you. And I'd like to say that this release was timed with all that in mind, but it wasn't really. It's just a kind of very lucky coincidence. Like a lot of things about kind of how we've got where we've got, it's just fortune, really.
Right.
Good timing.
Right. Hey, timing is at least 90% of the key to success. How much hope do you have for the future?
It's weird. I'm not the most optimistic person, sort of, day to day. Well, I'd say I'm far from the most optimistic person. So, I don't know. It's weird, that message that kind of emerges from our music, and, that's obviously in me somewhere.
It is very hopeful.
It's an optimistic one. Yeah. It's really weird. It obviously needs to find a way of coming out, otherwise I'd probably crumble into a pit of depression. I'd ask people to listen to the music, I guess, and judge for themselves rather than listen to myself.
Sure, no problem.
Semi-paranoid, anxious rambling. Yeah.
Hey, that's where the best optimism comes from. So, I personally, as a huge Doctor Who fan, I need to know. A man inspired by Matt Smith has to have a favorite planet. What's yours?
Oh wow, favorite planet. I've always been partial to Jupiter. And the red dot, that's twice the size of Earth alone, and it's a storm that's raging for hundreds of years, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And you can see it with a naked eye from Earth. And awesome. it's one of the best of the planets, hosts of the planets, which helped.
Right.
Although the older I've got, the more I appreciate kind of the non-hits
And then, there's the whole Arthur C. Clarke angle to it, too. Jupiter.
Absolutely, yep.
Very cool. And one more, sort of serious-ish question. So a lot of, PBS and BBC and all the educational programming, in a way, it was centered around sort of a communal experience. So is a communal experience something you guys think of, in your music, and especially with the live endeavor?
It's part of our nature that we seek those experiences and that we really enjoy them. It's a big part of why we do what we do live, is to kind of get all these kind of reasonably like-minded people in the same room, hopefully sort of capture something off the back of that, people are, good evening's entertainment, I suppose. The fragmentation of kind of popular contemporary media, I think, is it's kind of good and bad in many ways, but I think, there's at least more choice these days, and hopefully a bit more kind of opportunity to educate yourself as part of that, but the downside of that is obviously the ease with which certain more nefarious networks will spread their
Sure, sure.
Nonsense, naming their names, but obviously Fox News.
Sure, sure. Hey, I love that everybody knows that, you know, all around the world people know to ignore Fox News. It's
it's a disgrace, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm waiting for Black Mirror to just you know, like, go past the, you know, I'm waiting for Black Mirror to just show Fox News instead of trying to beat around the bush.
Well, yeah, you can't satirize that. You know, it would be funny if it wasn't true, but it is. So there you go.
Right, right. So for some, you know, future plans, I know you said you have an idea of where to go. You didn't tell the other website. Are you ready to tell me a little of where you're ready to go?
No.
Next. Oh, okay. All right.
We like to keep a bit of enigma and a mystery. So part of that is kind of keeping our cards close to our chest. But
sure, sure.
I don't know. What I would say is, you know, we've been looking at very big and epic and grand scale stuff. It'd be nice to kind of focus on something a bit more human and maybe kind of boil it down a little bit.
Sure.
And just look at different ways of working with material and, not
very cool.
Not kind of just moving on to the next big thing in history and just kind of treating it exactly the same way. I think that would start to get a bit tiresome. So we need to keep things fresh, really.
So is it a bit more, if feel free to let me keep guessing, but is it a bit more, you know, quieter, personal, or?
No, I'd say, if anything, it maybe slightly more political.
Maybe
it's not to come off the fence a little bit, but we'll see.
Sure, sure. We're in New York, and I can't wait for you guys to get here. I'll be there. So what are you looking forward to most in at the Barry Ballroom? What do you like most about New York?
I think it's the most exciting place I've ever been.
Very cool.
I don't know, there's just something in the atmosphere there. And there's somebody who sort of grew up in London, you travel as a kid and then you travel as a teenager and you go off to university somewhere and most places just seem a bit small because you're kind of grown up in this massive metropolis that it takes, you know, sort of two and a half hours to sort of traverse by public transport, whatever. And then you get to somewhere like New York and it seems enormous and you realize, well, it's just the scale of it, I think, and the sheer range of stuff that's going on and the kind of the energy about it and the edge to it as well. I think it needs to retain that kind of slight edge of danger.
Us locals are trying to hang on to that.
No one wants to get bloody mugged at gunpoint or anything, but you know what I mean?
It can't all be Starbucks.
Yeah, it's happening in London, you know, it's kind of sold in the highest bidder, basically, and I'm not a big fan of what's happening in London at the moment. But
sure. Are you from London?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Okay. But like born and raised, like not from the suburbs.
Yeah. London, yeah.
Very cool. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. What's the? This is not the first time, right? You're coming to New York. It's.
We came to CMJ and then we played also at the Mercury Lounge. Last year. So we've kind of. We've been there a few times. Love it. And
very
hopefully,
cool.
So the lounge and we're kind of hoping that, you know, we can kind of keep the numbers going outwards rather than kind of...
Sure, sure. Back, so I mean, good thing about Barry is it's a good room to make seem packed very easily.
Right.
Right. I'm guessing the British sensibility isn't lost here.
No. New York is very different to the rest of America. It certainly feels like it as a foreigner. And I think a lot of Americans would probably agree with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool. And, to wrap up, what's the first thing you'll do after you're done touring?
It's hard to say.
Disneyland!
I don't know.
Because, you know, like, I'm trying to get at, you know, when is the next project out, but I guess that's still, at the conceptual stage.
I need to start doing some research. I need to get, work up a bit of creative energy first to get to the point where you can sort of be excited about starting something new rather than just exhausted.
Well, while you're in, you know, while you're in the city, yeah, you have to try Four Loko. It's legal now in New York City. So,
Okay.
it's only resulted in one death, so you should be okay. But I just have to, I feel like I have to tell you personally, I'm getting married in October, and me and my best man, we are going to recreate the video for Gagarin
Oh, wow.
at
Bloody hell.
the wedding.
That's
We will not get spacesuits. We'll try to do
right.
it in
Okay, yeah, very good luck. Wow.
tuxes.
Yeah, that's gonna be tough. Wow. Good luck for that.
Thank you, and thanks for putting that thing out there. Thanks for, you know, everything you guys do, and I will see you next Friday.
Oh, okay, yeah. Thanks a lot.